Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
History is written in blood. Today we're going to be talking about Richard Ramirez, but before we do, I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Dallas, known as Big D of Straight Football Talk and the Bareback Facts, but today I'm just going to stick to my normal name, and that would be Dallas. I hope for any of you out there that are first-time listeners, that you find today's show enlightening. But for those of you who have been here since the beginning, I say thank you. And I hope you, too, find this show illuminating. For those of you who are first-time visitors, I just hope you never want to leave. Now, before we begin, I'd like to throw out the fact that our call-in number for the show is 718-508-9883. And if you'd like to talk with me and my deranged self, feel free to call in any time. And it seems that I do, in fact, have a call-in, which is odd since we have not yet started the show. But I shall acknowledge this call-in. Let's see what they have to say. Oh, what a shame. And they fell out before I could answer it. Well, that's all right. Let's get right into the show today, shall we? Today's subject is infamous serial killer Richard Ramirez, otherwise known as the Night Stalker, a man who earned his name for his brutality. Mr. Ramirez, today, and see what we can glean about this deranged individual. Richard Ramirez was born as Richard Leyva Munez Ramirez. He was born February 29th in 1960 in El Paso, Texas. He was born the youngest of Julian and Mercedes Ramirez's five children. His father was the Mexican national and former Juarez policeman who became a laborer on the Santa Fe Railroad. He was a hard-working man and prone to fits of anger that often resulted in physical abuse. But this is only the beginning of Mr. Ramirez's story. As a child, young Ramirez, Richard, sustained two serious head injuries. Once, when he was 2 years old, a dresser fell on top of him, causing a forehead laceration that required 30 stitches to close. When he was 5 years old, he was knocked unconscious by a swing at a park, after which he experienced frequent epileptic seizures that persisted into his early teens. As a 12-year-old boy, he was strongly influenced by his older cousin Miguel, many called Mike, who was a decorated U.S. Army Green Beret combat veteran who often boasted of his gruesome exploits during the Vietnam War. He shared Polaroid photos of his victims, including a Vietnamese woman he claimed that he had raped. In some of the photos, Mike posed with a severed head of a woman he claimed to have abused. Ramirez, who had smoked marijuana since the age of 10, bonded his cousin over many joints and gory war stories. Mike taught his young cousin some of his military skills, and these would prove to be quite useful to young Richard later on in life. He taught him the art of stealth and How to Kill with Surety. Around this time, Ramirez began to seek escape father's violent temper by sleeping in a local cemetery at night. Fitting, since so many others would permanently find their resting place in a cemetery at the hands of Richie. Richie, as he was known to his father, was present on May 4th, 1973, when his cousin fatally shot his own wife, Jessie, in the face with a .38-caliber revolver during a domestic argument. After the shooting, Richie became sullen and withdrawn from his family and peers. Later that year, he would move in with his older sister, Ruth, and her husband, Roberto, an obsessive peeping Tom who took Richie along during his nocturnal exploits. Ramirez said they began using LSD and cultivated an interest in Satanism. So from a young age, we see that Richie is easily influenced. Richie was born of violence. And his most inspiring figures in his life, or at least the most influential, was his abusive father, his vicious cousin, who killed his own wife in front of young Richie, and his older sister's peeping Tom husband. And then we see that his use of drugs escalates. Starting early on, he becomes a drinker and a smoker of marijuana, and those things themselves do not make a psychopath, but a person who is already psychotic might find such things to be less than calming. And then, to add to his devil's cocktail, he began to experiment with LSD. And this is where we find young Richie, at the age of 13, running around in the middle of the night under the influence of alcohol, marijuana, and LSD, peeping in on young women in the middle of the night with his sister's husband. His cousin Mike would later be found to be not guilty of Jesse's murder by reason of insanity. With his combat record as a mitigating factor, and he would be in fact released in 1977 after only 4 years of incarceration in the Texas State Mental Institution. And upon his release, his influence over young Richie would continue. The adolescent Ramirez began to meld his burgeoning sexual fantasies with violence, including forced bondage and ideas of rape. While still in school, he took a job at a local Holiday Inn, where he used his passkey to rooms to rob sleeping patrons. Turned to his room, finding Ramirez attempting to rape his wife. Though the husband beat Ramirez senseless at the scene, criminal charges were dropped when the couple who lived out of state declined to return to testify against him. Shortly afterward, Ramirez would drop out of Jefferson High School in the ninth grade. And at the age of 22, he moved to California, where he settled permanently. I don't have to tell you already that growing up, Richie was troubled. The crime that he was involved in was the murder of his own cousin's wife, and whilst he did not pull the trigger, he certainly was there. And I cannot help but wonder if evil already grew and beat in that heart of his, that black, dark heart. Or if it was simply something that helped filled in his heart a lust for violence. It's important to note that during the incident involving his cousin Mike and his wife Jessie, Ramirez was at the scene of the crime and never lifted a finger to help Jessie. Whilst he was young, he could have simply picked up the phone and called the police, but he didn't even do that. Truth of the matter is that Richie idolized Mike, and he didn't want to do anything to get him in trouble. But I think we all know the truth other than simply his idolization of his cousin. I think we all know that Richie didn't call because Richie wanted to see someone die. Now, in 1977, when he was 17 years old, Ramirez, prior to getting this job at the Holiday Inn, was sent to a juvenile detention center for a series of petty crimes, not limited to, but including petty theft, breaking and entering, and vandalization of property. He was also put on probation for possession of marijuana in 1982. Now, after these crimes and the incident at the Holiday Inn, upon dropping out of school, Ramirez moved to California and continued to commit such crimes as burglary, possession of illegal narcotics, as well as car theft, which resulted in a jail sentence. It wasn't until he was 24 years old, however, that Ramirez himself would delve into a world of violence. On April 10th of 1984, Ramirez committed his first crime of murder. Well, at least the first truly brutal crime. April 10th in 1984, 9-year-old Mei Leung was found murdered in a hotel basement where Ramirez was living in the district of San Francisco, some refer to as the Tenderloin. It's a neighborhood in downtown San Francisco, in the flatlands on the southern slope of Nob Hill, situated between the Union Square shopping district and the Civic Center office. Rundown part of town where Ramirez began preying on people. The young girl had been raped, beaten, and stabbed to death. Her body was found hanging. This happens to be the first known killing but was not initially identified as being connected to the crime spree of Richard Ramirez. In 2009, however, Ramirez's DNA would be matched to DNA obtained at the crime scene. And as late as last year, officials disclosed evidence of a secular DNA sample retrieved from the crime scene, who is believed to have been present at this poor soul's murder. Described as being a juvenile at the time, authorities have not publicly identified the other suspect and have never brought charges to them due to the lack of sufficient evidence. So we will never know, perhaps, who Ramirez's accomplice was in this crime, but we do know this. At the age of 24, Ramirez kicked off his murdering spree by brutally beating, raping, and stabbing to death a young 9-year-old girl before hanging her body from a pipe in the basement of a hotel, like a freshly killed deer. Ramirez would not stop here, however. On June 28, 1984, Richard Ramirez would target 79-year-old Jenny Vincow in her apartment in Glassell Park, break in while she was asleep, and stab her repeatedly in her bed, cutting her throat so deeply that she is nearly decapitated in the process. Ramirez's fingerprints would be found on a mesh screen he removed to gain access through an open window in her apartment. Mrs. Vincow never heard him enter and likely did not know there was an intruder in her house until the knife was already in her throat. Ramirez would not stop two brutal crimes, however. His spree would continue. On March 17th in 1985, Ramirez would target a young woman named Maria Hernandez, only 22 years old, 3 years his junior. He would attack her outside her home in Rosemead, shooting her in the face with a .22 caliber handgun after she pulled into her garage. She would survive when a bullet miraculously ricocheted off the keys she held in her hands as she lifted them to protect herself. Her only providence. Inside her house was her roommate, Dale Akazaki, age 34, who heard the gunshot and ducked behind a counter when she saw Ramirez enter the kitchen. But when she raised her head, he shot her once in the forehead, killing her. Within an hour of the Rosemead home invasion, Ramirez pulled 30-year-old Cy Leon Veronica Yu out of her car in Monterey Park and shot her twice as well with the .22 caliber handgun and would flee the scene. She would be pronounced dead on arrival at the hospital. The two murders and a third in a single day attracted, of course, extensive coverage from news media, who dubbed the curly-haired attacker with bulging eyes and wide-spaced, rotting teeth the walk-in killer and the valley intruder. This is only the beginning of Richard Ramirez's spree, and already such terror unleashed on poor, unsuspecting people. To wonder if Richard Ramirez simply snapped, or whether or not perhaps being brought up in an environment filled with violence and cruelty, we have to wonder if maybe born and bred to be a monster. Richard Ramirez, however, would not stop despite this media coverage. 10 days later, on the 27th of March in the same year, 1985, Richard entered a home that he had burgled early in the year in Whittier. At approximately 2 a.m., he would break in again and kill the sleeping Vincent Zazzaro, age 64, with a gunshot to his head from the same .22 caliber handgun he'd been using in his two previous murders. Cesaro's wife, Maxine, a 44-year-old woman in deep sleep, was awakened by her husband's brutal murder. Upon awakening, in shock, Ramirez beat her and bound her hands while demanding to know where her valuables were. While he ransacked the room, Maxine escaped her bonds and retrieved a shotgun from under the bed. Unfortunately for her, the gun was not loaded. Ramirez became infuriated at her resistance. He would shoot her three times with his 22 and then fetch a large carving knife from the kitchen, with which he mutilated her body with multiple stab wounds and gouged her eyes out. He then placed her eyes in a jewelry box and took it with him. The autopsy determined, however, that these mutilations were post-mortem, so fortunate for Maxine that she did not have to be alive during this vicious assault. Ramirez left only footprint pair of Avia sneakers in the flower beds, which the police photographed and cast. This was virtually the only evidence that the police had at the time. Bullets found at the scene were matched to those found at previous attacks, and the police realized now that a serial killer was at large. The bodies of Maxine and Vincent were discovered by their son, Peter, who had come to visit his parents. On May 14th, 1985, Ramirez returned to Monterey Park in search of another random victim. He entered the home of 66-year-old Bill Doy and his disabled wife, Lillian, who was at her age 56. Surprising Doy in his bedroom, Ramirez shot him in the face with a 22 semi-automatic pistol as Doy went for his own handgun to defend himself. After beating the mortally wounded man into unconsciousness, Ramirez entered Lillian's bedroom and bound her with thumb cuffs. He then raped her and ransacked her home for valuables. Her husband, Bill, would die of his injuries whilst in the hospital. Richard, of course, would flee the scene, bulging with loot. On the night of May 29th, 1985, Ramirez drove a stolen Mercedes-Benz to Monrovia and stopped at the house of Mabel Ma Bell, 83-year-old woman, and her sister Florence Nettie Lang, an 81-year-old woman. The two sisters would be asleep at this late hour. Finding a hammer in the kitchen, Ramirez bludgeoned and bound the invalid Lang in her room, then bound and bludgeoned Bell before using an electrical cord to electrically shock both the women. After raping poor Nettie Lang, he used Mabel Bell's lipstick to draw a pentagram on her thigh as well as on the walls of both bedrooms. Discovered 2 days later, both women were found alive but comatose, unfortunately. And Mabel Bell would later die of her injuries, leaving her sister Florence to not only deal with the physical scarring of the crime committed against her, but also the loss of her dear sister. The next day, Richard Ramirez drove the same car to Burbank and snuck into the home of Carol Kyle, a 42-year-old woman. At gunpoint, he bound Kyle and her 11-year-old son with handcuffs while he ransacked the house. He would release Kyle to direct him to where the family's valuables were. He then sodomized her repeatedly in front of her son and repeatedly ordered them both not to look at him, telling her at one point that he would cut her eyes out. He then fled the scene after retrieving the child from the closet and binding the two together again with handcuffs. Clearly, Richard was a monster, but a monster who was still just getting into the swing of things. On the night of July 2nd, 1985, he drove a stolen Toyota to Arcadia and randomly selected the house of 75-year-old Mary Louise Cannon. After quietly entering the widowed grandmother's home, he found her asleep in her bedroom. He would bludgeon her into unconsciousness with a lamp and then repeatedly stabbing her until she died using a 10-inch butcher knife from her own kitchen. She would be found dead at the scene. On July 5th, 1985, Ramirez broke into a home in Sierra Madre and bludgeoned 16-year-old Whitney Bennett with a tire iron as she slept in her bedroom. After searching in vain for a knife in the kitchen, Ramirez attempted to strangle the girl with a telephone cord. He was startled to see sparks emanate from the cord, and when his victim began to breathe, he fled the house, believing that Jesus Christ himself had intervened and saved her. She survived the savage beating, which would require 478 stitches to close the lacerations to her scalp. And yet still, Ramirez remained at large. On July 7, 1985, Ramirez burglarized the home of 61-year-old Joyce Lucille Nelson, again in Monterey Park. Finding her asleep on her living room couch, he beat her to death using his fists and kicking her head in. A shoe print from an Avia sneaker was imprinted on her face. The savage beating that he dealt her. After cruising two other neighborhoods, he returned to Monterey Park and chose the home of 63-year-old Sophie Dickman as his next target. Ramirez assaulted and handcuffed Dickman at gunpoint, attempted to rape her, and stole her jewelry when she swore to him that he had taken everything of value that she possessed. He told her that she must swear it on the name of Satan himself before he would leave her. On July 20th, 1985, only 13 days later, Ramirez purchased a machete before driving a stolen Toyota to Glendale. He chose the home of 66-year-old Leela Knighting and her 68-year-old husband, Maxon. Upon entering the home, he burst into the sleeping couple's bedroom and hacked them to death with a machete, or at least hacked them to the point where they could not resist him. He then finished them off with shots to the head from a .22-caliber handgun and further mutilated their bodies with a machete before robbing their house of all valuables. After quickly fencing the stolen items from their residence, he then drove to Sun Valley. And at approximately 4:15 in the morning, he broke into the home of the Kavanagh family. Once broken in, he murdered Shunarong Kavanagh by shooting the sleeping man in the head with a .25-caliber handgun, killing him instantly. He then repeatedly raped Somkid Kavanagh, beating and sodomizing her, and bound the couple's terrified 8-year-old son before dragging Somkid around the house to reveal the location of any valuables that they possessed, which he stole. During his assault, he demanded that she swear to Satan that she was hiding no money from him. On August 6th, 1985, Ramirez drove to Northridge and broke into the home of Chris and Virginia Peterson. Ramirez crept into their bedroom, startling 27-year-old Virginia and shooting her in the face with a .25-caliber semi-automatic handgun. He would shoot Chris Peterson in the temple and attempted to flee, but Peterson fought back, avoiding being hit by two more shots during the struggle before Ramirez escaped. The couple would somehow miraculously survive their injuries. On August 8, 2 days later, Ramirez drove a stolen car to Diamond Bar and chose the home of 27-year-old Sakina Abawath and her husband Elias Abawath, age 31. Sometime after 2:30 in the morning, he entered their house and went into the master bedroom. He instantly killed sleeping Elias with a shot to the head from a .25-caliber handgun. He then handcuffed and beat Sakina while forcing her to reveal the locations of the family's jewelry. He then brutally raped and sodomized her, repeatedly demanding that she swear to Satan that she would not scream during his assaults. When the couple's 3-year-old son entered the bedroom, Ramirez tied the child up and then continued to rape Sakina in front of the child. Ramirez left the home. Did so, Sakina untied her son and sent him to the neighbors for help. she was physically unable to flee her home at the moment. Ladies and gentlemen, clearly, as I read through these various crimes committed by Ramirez, it's clear we're dealing with a vicious and truly merciless individual. But before we continue on our journey, before we reach the end, it's time for a commercial break. And remember that after the break, you can feel free to call in at any time, 718-508-9883. But before we go to commercial break, we here at Totally Driven Entertainment have a proud new sponsor. He's funny, he's wacky, and he's crazy. Check out ChrisFraleyPresents.com. We'll be back after the break when we delve into the last of Richard Ramirez's brutal murders and we talk about the end of the line.
I'm Black Man. Saving man dies. One stereotype at a time.
To the Black Mother. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard. Pronto.
Will Black Man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is a perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause. www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Thank you. Welcome back, everyone, to the Bareback Facts, where this season history is written in blood. And as before we left, we were going down the line of the various examples of Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker killer's level of brutality and viciousness, the crimes he committed against innocence. When we left, brutally savaged young 27-year-old Sakina Abowath after murdering her husband, binding her son in the room and forcing them both to endure his cruelty. Picking up where we left off, Ramirez had been following the media coverage of his crimes, and so knowing that his time might be running out, he left the Los Angeles area and headed to the San Francisco Bay Area. 10 days after his brutality in the Abowath home, Ramirez would enter the home of Peter and Barbara Pan. He would murder 66-year-old Peter in his sleep with a gunshot temple with a 25 caliber handgun. Barbara, who was 62, was beaten and sexually violated before being shot in the head and left for dead. At the crime scene, Ramirez had used lipstick to scrawl a pentagram and the phrase "Jack the Knife" on the bedroom wall. When it was discovered that the ballistic and shoe print evidence from the Night Stalker crime scenes matched the Pan crime scene, then Mayor of San Francisco Dianne Feinstein divulged the information in a televised press conference. The leak infuriated the detectives in the case, as they knew the killer would be following media coverage and have an opportunity to destroy crucial forensic evidence. Ramirez, who had indeed been watching the press, dropped his size 11.5 Avia sneakers over the side of the Golden Gate Bridge that night. He remained in the area for a few more days before heading back to Los Angeles. On August 24th, Ramirez traveled 76 miles south of Los Angeles in a stolen orange Toyota to Mission Viejo. That night, he arrived at the home of James Romero Jr., who had just returned from a family vacation to the Rosarita Beach in Mexico. Romero's son, 13-year-old James Romero III, happened to be awake and heard Ramirez's footsteps outside the house. Thinking that there was a prowler, James went to wake his parents and Ramirez would flee the scene. James raced outside and was able to note the color, make, and style of the car, as well as a partial license plate number. Romero would contact the police with this information, believing James had chased away a thief. Interestingly enough, young James Romero III had saved his family's whole house and perhaps even saved the lives of everyone in his family. Now, following this encounter, Ramirez would then break into the house of Bill Carnes and his fiancée Inez Erickson, both 30 and 29 respectively. He would break in through the back door and enter the bedroom of the sleeping couple, awakening Carnes when he cocked his 25 caliber handgun. He shot Carnes 3 times in the head before turning his attention to Erickson. Ramirez told the terrified woman that he was the Night Stalker, to her to swear she loved Satan as he beat her with fists and bound her with neckties from the closet. After stealing what he could find, he dragged her to another room to rape and sodomize her. He then demanded cash and jewelry, making Erickson swear to the devil himself that there was no more. Before leaving the home, Ramirez told Erickson to tell them that the Night Stalker was here. Erickson untied herself and went to a neighbor's house to get help for her severely injured fiancé. Fortunately for him, he was rushed to the hospital, and the surgeons were able to remove 2 of the bullets from his head, and this allowed him to survive his brutal encounter with the Night Stalker. Erickson was able to give a detailed description of the assailant to investigators, and police were able to obtain a cast of Ramirez's footprint from the Romero house. The stolen car was found on August 28th in Wilshire Center, Los Angeles, and police were able to obtain a fingerprint from the rearview mirror despite Ramirez's careful efforts to wipe the car clean of his prints. The prints was positively identified as belonging to Richard Munoz Ramirez, who was described as a 25-year-old drifter from Texas with a long rap sheet that included arrests for traffic and illegal drug violations. When officials decided to release to the media a mugshot of Ramirez from December 12th of 1984 from an arrest for car theft. And now the Night Stalker had a face. At the police press conference, it was announced directly to Ramirez, "We know who you are now, and soon everyone else will. There will be no place that you can hide." On August 30th, 1985, Ramirez took a bus to Tucson, Arizona, to visit his brother. He was completely unaware that he'd become the lead story in virtually every major newspaper and television news program across the state of California. After failing to meet his brother, he returned to Los Angeles early on the morning of August 31st. He would walk past police officers who happened to be staking out the bus terminal in the hopes of catching the killer should he attempt to flee on an outbound bus to a convenience store in East Los Angeles. After noticing a group of elderly Mexican women fearfully identifying him as El Matador, or the killer, Ramirez saw his face on the covers of the newspaper rack and fled the store in a panic. After running across the Santa Ana freeway, he attempted to carjack a woman but was chased away by bystanders who pursued him. After hopping over several fences and attempting two more carjackings, he was eventually subdued by a group of residents, one of whom he'd struck over the head with a metal bar in the pursuit, held him down and relentlessly beat him until police arrived and took Ramirez into custody. Jury selection for his case started on July 22nd in 1988 at his first court appearance. Ramirez raised a hand with a pentagram drawn out of it and yelled at the top of his lungs, "Hail Satan." On August 3rd, 1988, the Los Angeles Times reported that some jail employees overheard Ramirez planning to shoot the prosecutor with a gun, which Ramirez intended to have smuggled into the courtroom. Consequently, a metal detector was installed outside the courtroom, and intensive searches were conducted on people entering. On August 14th, the trial was interrupted because one of the jurors, Phyllis Singletary, did not arrive at the courtroom. Later that day, she was found brutally shot to death in her apartment. The jury was terrified and could not help wondering if Ramirez had somehow directed this event from inside his prison cell and if he could reach other jury members. However, Ramirez was not responsible for Singletary's death, no matter how much he wanted to claim he was. She'd been shot and killed by her boyfriend, who had later committed suicide with the same weapon in a hotel. The alternative juror who replaced her was too frightened to return to her home. On September 20th, 1989, Ramirez was convicted of all charges. And the laundry list of his crimes was indeed a long one. Ramirez was convicted of 13 counts of murder, 5 attempted counts of attempted murder, 11 sexual assaults, and 14 burglaries. During the death penalty phase of the trial on November 7th in 1989, he was sentenced to die in California's gas chamber. He stated to reporters after the death sentences, "Big deal. Death always went with the territory. I'll see you all in Disneyland." The trial itself cost $1.8 million, which today would be approximately $3.48 million, which at the time made it the most expensive trial in the history of California until surpassed by the O.J. Simpson murder case in 1994. By the time of the trial, Ramirez had fans who were writing him letters and paying him visits. He had become the Ted Bundy of his generation. Beginning in 1985, Doreen Loyal wrote him nearly 75 letters during his incarceration. And in 1988, he proposed to her. October 3rd, 1996, they were married at California's San Quentin State Prison. For many years before Ramirez's death, Loyal stated that she would commit suicide when Ramirez was executed. However, the two of them eventually separated, and by some estimates, he would have been in his early 70s before his execution was carried out, due to the lengthy CALA process. On August 7th of 2006, his first round of state appeals ended unsuccessfully when the California Supreme Court upheld his convictions and death sentence. On September 7th of 2006, California Supreme Court denied for his request for a rehearing. Ramirez would have appeals pending until the time of his death. But Ramirez would never make it to the gas chamber. No, he would deny his victims a true judgment before them. He would deny them a true sense of justice. For they would not get to see Ramirez die for his crimes, as Richard Ramirez would die of complications secondary to B-cell lymphoma at Marin General Hospital in Greenbrae, California, on June 7th of 2013. He'd also been affected by chronic substance abuse and chronic hepatitis C, the viral infection. At the age of 53, when he died, he had been on death row for more than 23 years. And such is the journey, crimes of Richard the Night Stalker killer, Ramirez. A man who was born of violence, was inspired by it, who then claimed to have a direct pact with Satan himself. And then began one of the most violent and vicious criminal sprees in all of American history. But before the end of our show, perhaps we should gain a better understanding of what sort of a person Richard Ramirez truly was outside of his murders, outside of the vicious crimes that he committed. Perhaps we should hear from the devil's mouth what he thought about human life and what he thought about himself. So before we adjourn, we'll be going over some of the more famed and horrifying statements made by the Night Stalker killer, so that we might gain an insight into what madness dwelt behind the eyes of this brutal murderer. But before we do that, we're going to take one more commercial break. And as, of course, I mentioned before, proud new sponsor at Totally Driven Entertainment. He's wacky, he's funny, and he's crazy. Check out ChrisFraleyPresents.com for some lighter entertainment. And when we return from the commercial break, we shall delve directly into the mind of the Night Stalker killer. We shall find out what he had to say for himself. Until then, enjoy the commercial break. Consider it a grace period, if you will.
I'm black man. Saving man's eyes. One stereotype at a time.
To the black mother. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard. Pronto.
Will Black Man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFarleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is a perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin on the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our Wacky Stores page on Facebook.
Welcome back to the Bareback Facts, Blood and Guys. We have just charted through the vicious and brutal crime spree of the Night Stalker killer, Richard Ramirez. And we've seen the terror that he wrought upon his victims, but we still don't quite have a grasp of who this man truly was. A man who even eluded justice. Perhaps one might see the manner of his death to be a poetic justice, but I'm certain that it offered very little in the way of closure to those victims whom he left behind to deal with the terrific and horrifying wounds that he placed upon their bodies, scarring them emotionally and physically, families, and leaving gaping holes in numerous communities, families,
But now it is time to dive into the realm of madness itself. Time for us to look into the mind of this monster. And these are some of the various things that Richard Ramirez has said. Richard Ramirez is quoted to have said, "You do not understand me. You are not expecting beyond your experience." Everybody has got good and evil in them. I'd like to be 100% evil, but I can't. I'm too easygoing sometimes. Then again, while anger and hate are two things that some people can cope with, I cannot. My anger and hate grow to a level that I cannot live with comfortably. It causes me headaches and stuff. When I get angry, it's an extreme form. It is the extreme. There is no in-between. But there is good. There is with good and evil. And I am there. Richard Ramirez said, "I love to kill people. I love to watch them die. I would shoot them in the head and they would wiggle and squirm all over the place and then just stop, or I would cut them with a knife and watch their faces turn real white." He claimed that he loved all that blood. We are all evil in some form or another, are we not? He asks. Richard said, "Who's to say what's evil? A man's beliefs are his own business. Neither the church nor anybody else has the right to tell you how to act. That's what real freedom is about. To be able to be who you really are, not what you are expected or supposed to be." Perhaps most chilling of all, was this quote by Richard Ramirez. He said, "We've all got the power in our hands to kill, but most people are afraid to use it. The ones who aren't afraid control life itself." Richard Ramirez claimed also, he said, following former quote, and I shall reread this previous quote because it feeds into this quote, this secondary quote. He said, "You do not understand me. You're not expected to, and you're not capable. I am beyond your experience. I am beyond good and evil. I will be avenged. Lucifer dwells in all of us. I don't believe in the hypocritical, moralistic dogma of this so-called civilized society. You maggots make me sick. Hypocrites, one and all. I don't need to hear all of society's rationalizations. I've heard them all before. Legions of the night, nightbreed, repeat not the errors of the night prowler and show no mercy." And finally, one more quote. Why not? Normal people, ordinary people, do not think like a serial killer. They have no conception of what's going on in the killer's mind and how he operates. They don't read, which is rightfully so. If they have a life to live, they're not going to spend a lot of time reading up on killers if that's not their interest. Certainly, serial killers and killers have the advantage in that they use the element of surprise, darkness, and such things as this. Finally, I think he describes not only Richard Ramirez, but also the lens of season two of my show itself. For you see, Richard Ramirez has a bit of a prophetic statement to make to us in his madness. And is it not true that sometimes in madness we too can find wisdom? Well, today you shall find it, for this prophetic statement of Richard Ramirez could not possibly be better suited to this show, even if I tried to make it so. The final quote from this madman is this that I shall share with you today. He claimed, "Evil has always existed. The world most people seek shall never come to pass. And it's going to get worse." Perhaps Richard Ramirez held a dim view of the world. He clearly had a disdain for life, disdain for purity, and a streak of violence in him and viciousness that is not often seen in the everyday person. Truly, he was a terrifying figure and worthy of the moniker the Night Stalker Killer. And truly, he was a madman, violent and brutal. But with that being said, in regards to this show, he is quite correct. The perfect world that everybody seeks is unachievable. But there is one thing that you can count as certain. He is just the beginning of our journey into the darkest corners of history together. He is just the stepping stone toward the abyss that we will take together. I promised you all blood. I promised you all darkness. Season two. Season two of the Bareback Facts is in full effect. And henceforth, you will know. You will know the darkness that lies in the pages of history. It started with Richard Ramirez, but it certainly will not end with him. We shall journey on in spite of his demise. We carry the torch further into the deepest, darkest reaches of history. Together, we shall find that the pages of history are soaked in blood. And together, we'll uncover the darkest reaches that the ages have hidden from us. Together we shall hunt down killers, dictators, and devour warlords. All in good time. I hope you've all enjoyed today's show. I hope you found it illuminating. For those of you interested in researching the horrific, brutal individual, there are a number of articles dedicated to it. But I think you might find for Philip Carlo, The Night Stalker, The Life and Crimes of Richard Ramirez, and Laura Foreman, Serial Killers, True Crime, to be valuable resources in your search. I hope you've all learned a lot today. And don't you fret. The night is always darkest before the dawn, as they say. But I promise you, this season, the dawn is a long ways away. The horizon of a new day lies far at the end of a dark, dark landscape inhabited by the cruelest denizens that history has to offer. Catch my show live Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time as we are introduced to another madman. You might know him as the Son of Sam. I shall see you all in your nightmares, and I shall see you all on Friday. Enjoy the rest of your week, and remember, kids, check under the bed, check the closet, and make sure that all the doors are really locked. I'm Dallas Duclo, your host, and I'll see you all Friday. Until then, let the shadows fall away, and may the light of day preserve you. Until next time.